Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. There's an interesting project ongoing, a book and a website. The title is Shot, 101 Survivors of Gun Violence in America. Here's just a portion of how they describe the project. The increasing ubiquity of gun violence has unfortunately become the norm across the world, but particularly in the United States, where we've begun to hear horror after horror on an almost daily basis. So much so, it's now started to produce a numbing effect, a helplessness that allows us to hear the news and say, here we go again, and put it out of our mind. Gun violence is now something we expect to happen. The goal of SHOT is to focus attention on the survivors of gun violence. People have been shot and survived the experience. And author of the book, founder of the project, is Kathy Shore, photographer based in New York City. This project is coming to Salt Lake City, and there'll be an event at the King's English Bookshop tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. Photographer Kathy Shore will lead a panel discussion and signing of her new book. And panelists will include five Utahns affected by gun violence: Bishop Scott Hayashi from the Episcopal Church of Utah, Carolyn Tuft, LaDon Prue, Dr. Claudia Fruin, founder of Bulletproof Kids, and Nancy Farr Halden from Gun Violence Prevention Center of Utah. Dr. Fruin, by the way, will join us later in this program. We welcome in now Kathy Shore. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate you being with us. Understand, one of the seeds for this project was a traumatic experience you and your daughter shared. I wonder if you could start there.
Yes, but I just want to say something before I start.
Yes.
We didn't mention LaDon Prue, who is also a survivor from Sandy. She'll be with us tomorrow. And I just got word this morning that Mr. Craig Worth, a Utah journalist, is going to be the moderator. So I just wanted to get that.
Yeah, Craig Worth, a well-respected voice in Utah. Okay.
Okay, so the question that you asked about what happened to me. A number of years ago, when my daughter was a toddler, I had an armed home invasion in my Greenwich Village apartment, and I had two men dressed as mailmen in uniforms with a package come to the door, and when I opened it, they pushed in, and I just fell back, and the next thing I knew, there was a gun pointed at myself and my child, and I was told to get inside. I'm not kidding. And it was probably the scariest thing that's ever happened to me, and I wouldn't wish that on anyone, to have a person pointing a gun at you, and based on how they feel at the moment, they could injure you, kill you, or just do such emotional damage that you might not be able to ever forget it. And also, I had the fact that my child was with me too, the person that I cared most about, that I was, you know, just really very, very concerned. Luckily for us, it was a robbery, and they took things and money and left. But before they left, they said if we contacted the police, they would come back and get us. So they were never caught, and it was just something that goes into your psyche. It's not something that you forget. It's not a thing I think about all the time, but if I was asked to relive that moment and think about it, it would bring up all that kind of helplessness and fear that someone else controls your destiny.
Yeah, that's part of it, right? It's scary. You don't know if you're going to get shot or not, but also you've lost control over your own life and death. They have that power at that moment.
Definitely. It is power. It's very much about power.
Do you over the years, did you, I don't know, do you push it away? Do you think about it from time to time?
Well, I mean, it's like any kind of experience, I guess, a trauma that you have in your life. It's there. It's part of you. It doesn't go away. And depending on the person and the experience, I think it stays tucked in the back, or it's something, unfortunately, that some people, you know, like PTSD, those kind of things people live with on a daily basis. Some of us are more fortunate than others in the fact that we are okay, and we don't have to relive this fear you know, constantly.
So I think it was years later, you were teaching in the public schools, right? And you noticed that some of the kids had laminated photos around their neck. These were dead loved ones?
Well, I was a New York City teaching fellow, and I was teaching in art and photography in the schools in crisis. And I would have students come in. I worked in a few schools, so it wasn't just one location. And students would come in with laminated photographs with, sunrise, sunset kind of things with dates on it of loved ones or friends that had been killed by gun violence. And I started to think about that in terms of how the people that were killed became kind of folk heroes. And I started to think about there's so many people that are shot and survive, and we never hear anything about them. They're basically statistics. They're just numbers that are thrown out there, and they never really have a face, and nobody is really honoring them or thinking about them as people that we should be concerned about. So, I thought it would be an interesting project to put a face onto survivors. And I knew that if I had to do that, that it would have to be a very diverse project because it would have to cover the entire United States. It wouldn't be just a city kind of thing or an East Coast kind of thing. I had to go across the U.S. and document this and have people of all races, which the project has, many ethnicities, ages 8 to 80, from high and low profile shootings, and as well as many gun owners are in the project. So in order to look at something as an issue that affects everyone, you really have to seek out everyone or representatives from all different parts of the community. So besides that, the other thing was that I felt that I wanted to create a project that would have people talk and have dialogue about it. When I started the project at the end of 2013, I felt that we were in a position where we were no longer talking to each other when we had differences of opinion. And it's since 2013, it's gotten much worse than it had been. So I felt that if you didn't like what I felt or my opinion of something, that you might just curse at me and tell me, you know, you're crazy and not listen to me. And that people were starting to get into these camps of black and white, and there was no gray in between them. There was no area other than the extremes, like you were for this or you were against it, but you didn't want to see both sides of the argument or the position. So I thought that it would be important to have this project be something that people could talk about and see that this was happening to all kinds of people and it could happen to anyone. And that rather than get into these positions of I should have a gun, I can have as many guns as I want, and you're not going to do anything to stop it, or the other extreme of nobody should have a gun ever, they're terrible, they're wrong, to instead of going to those extremes to talk about why people might have guns and why people want regulations on guns.
Yeah, this is an interesting perspective. As you write on the website, those who die from gun violence can only address the issue of statistics and memories, but the SHOT Project focuses on those living whose lives have been forever changed. And these people have unique standing right to talk, right? They have been directly impacted by gun violence.
Absolutely. Who better to talk about something that's happened than the person that it's happened to?
So the part of this was interesting. You felt it important in most of the photographs in the book. You've asked the person to go back to the scene of the shooting.
Yes, that is part of what I was talking about before in terms of making this a project that represents all Americans. So if by chance someone looked at the 101 photographs and said, oh, there's nobody here like me. I can't relate to any of these 101 different people, then perhaps they would be able to relate to the place where the person was shot. So most of the people are photographed where they were shot, and that, you know, if you can't relate to the deputy sheriff in Garland, Texas, who was shot by her husband, then you might be able to relate to the fact that she was shot by him in the Walmart parking lot because you go to Walmart. So, when people are shot, for the most part, they're not shot in these kind of scary, weird places. They're shot in normal places that we frequent in our daily lives. Supermarkets, shopping centers, churches, the gym, all kind of the movie theaters, places that we go to. And that was also a way to bring the message home that it happens to everyone and it also happens everywhere.
What general reaction did you get as you approached a person that had been shot? You told them, I want to take your photograph. I want to take it at the place where you were shot. What was the reaction you got?
Well, the first person that I photographed was the person that I tried all, you know, I presented with all the things that I was looking to do. So his name is Antonius, and he was shot on a crowded Brooklyn street. And I had an email dialogue with him about what I was thinking of doing. And he said that he would be the first person I photographed. And then I said to him that I was thinking of photographing people at the location where they were shot. And he had been shot about 7 weeks prior to that. So then he said, okay, I'll do that too. And then when we were at the location, I said, can I photograph your scar? And he lifted up his shirt. He said, sure. So after I did that, he said, I feel so good. I'm so glad I did this. It feels so cathartic. I feel like I took back this space. And that has been the most frequent response that I got from the survivors, that they were so glad that they did it and that they took back this moment in time and made it theirs.
Yeah, they owned it. Antonius, I was reading a bit about him. Very interesting. It's a striking photograph. It's against a red background, and he's got his red scar. That's an interesting reaction, and I think that was not unique, right? You had other survivors who said this was a cathartic for me.
Definitely, it was the more often than not. I would say most of the people said that they really were happy to take back this space. And everybody that was in the project, for the most part, said to me that they wanted to be part of this project because they felt that if it could happen, if one person would prevent this from happening to them, that they had done what they wanted to do, because they didn't want anybody else to have to experience what they experienced.
Interesting. That's one of the motives where they wanted to help protect others, or help
Definitely.
Better the society so that the others can be protected. Antonia said something interesting, and I can't remember where I was reading. I guess incident. He was a unfortunate bystander, right? And the incident was a man shooting his wife or girlfriend, and he pointed out that a lot of gun violence is domestic violence.
Yes, 20% of the project consists of domestic violence survivors, and domestic violence is, I call it, an equal opportunity employer. It affects all races, all socioeconomic classes, and it runs across all of society. So it's it affected me a lot hearing those stories, because of course, I'm a woman, and I think when women hear it, it's kind of, it hits closer to home. But there's also this idea that the person who is committing a domestic violence abuse is somebody that loves you, or somebody that may have loved you or still loves you. And it's the person that was closest to you in your entire life. So that betrayal of trust and the fact that the person doing this violence is somebody that loves you is such a heavy combination. And also with domestic violence, with a gun, it's always meant to kill the person that is the partner. The people are always shot in the head and the torso. They don't shoot them in the arm and say, like, oh, don't do this again or you'll be sorry. It's not about that. It's about killing somebody. So it's a very, very horrifying thing to see. And it's also very cliched in the sense that mostly every person said to me that line about, if I can't have you, nobody can. So it's very much about this idea of possessing somebody, owning somebody, and it usually happened to the people that I photographed at the time where they realized they had to get out of the relationship and they were trying to end it.
Mm. You mentioned earlier this Dallas law enforcement officer, Shirika Wesley, shot in the Walmart parking lot. That was domestic violence. Violence. I guess I was going to say an incident, but that seems inadequate. She was shot in the head. Survived. The perpetrator, her boyfriend or husband, killed himself. Just horrible. And then after effects. She's got titanium plates in her head.
Yes, I was just with Shirika in New Orleans at a book panel last week, and she's a remarkable woman. She makes you feel very inadequate. She is now a deputy sergeant on the Dallas Police Force. She has 7 children, 3 of which are triplets, and she's talking on panels and she's doing things, and she's quite remarkable. But the medicine and doctors and plastic surgery is another thing that, in doing this project, I was astounded at how the doctors put people back together. I photographed many people who were shot in the face, and I was right next to them, and you don't even see scars. And the other woman who was on the panel in New Orleans, Elizabeth, she also had half of her face was titanium. And it's the doctors managed to do plastic surgery that is undetectable to somebody that is standing 5 inches from someone. So that's a blessing. But there are other things that like Shirika was talking about when she, if she cried, one side of her face is basically numb, and the tears, I think it was on her right side, her eye, tears do not form. So if she were to cry, only the left side of her left eye would cry. So it may look pretty and right, but it doesn't function like it functioned prior to being shot.
Mm. Well, a very interesting project. We'll continue the discussion after a break. And fairly soon we're going to bring on Claudia Fruin, a pediatrician with Bulletproof Kids here in Utah. There's a panel discussion going to take place tomorrow night, 7 p.m. at the King's English Bookshop in Salt Lake City. And Kathy Shore, photographer and author of this book, Shot, 101 Survivors of Gun Violence in America, will be a part of that. And several Utahns who have been affected by gun violence will be also on that panel. And that panel will be moderated by Craig Worth. That's coming up. And the book's available. And the website, I think it's shotproject.org?
Correct.
And you can go and check out information on this very impactful book. We'll have more following this break.